Hello, welcome to the Tuesday, August 4th, 2015 edition of the SANS Internet Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and today I'm recording from Boston, Massachusetts. And I was reviewing some of the port 8080 web servers that I had running sort of as a honeypot. Turns out that I saw a number of SSH requests actually being sent to those HTTP honeypots. Now, the way you can tell that an SSH client is connecting to an HTTP server is that the SSH client first sends a banner with essentially the client's version, and this shows up as a request in your access log. Now, of course, with a bad method, SSH is the start of this request, so that's sort of interpreted by the HTTP server as the method, and the connection will fail. Sort of interesting, because I guess there is a significant population of SSH servers listening on port 8080, at least to make it worthwhile scanning the internet for those instances. Now, got some feedback from readers about this, and a couple mentioned that they do similar things like running SSH servers on port 443, for example, in order to evade firewall rules. Many more restricted networks do not allow outbound traffic on port 22, but do allow outbound traffic on some of these web ports, like, for example, port 443. Actually, port 443 would make more sense to me, because that traffic is often not inspected, while port 80 or 8080 for that matter typically would, in networks like this, go through some kind of proxy, and I doubt an SSH connection will work across a proxy. So, short lesson here. Well, it's a good idea usually to run an SSH server on and off port, but it should not be a well-known port if you do it to hide your server. Now, if you do it to make it easier accessible, of course, that's a different story. And no matter what port you run your SSH server on, it still needs to be properly secured. And here in the US, the early phase of the presidential election season has started, and with that, of course, lots of low-hanging fruit here for hacktivists to deface various candidates' website. Today was Donald Trump's turn. Now, apparently on his website, he used a standard vulnerable CMS in order to manage the website, but used underscores in the beginning of directory names in order to obfuscate the type of CMS used. That, of course, usually prevents simple scans that you look for very specific directory and file names, but when you have a little bit more targeted attacks, like once you start running for president, things, of course, should be secured a little bit more carefully. The site has been fixed by now, and it appears that the defacement was just that, just sort of posting a funny message on the site, and did not involve any malware or anything that would have affected visitors to the site. The site is just a simple corporate Trump.com site, so I don't think there was any personal information involved in this particular defacement. And then we got a new edition of the Mac Thunderstrike attack. Remember, this was the attack that allowed an attacker to flash firmware on these devices. Now, this latest version of the attack actually adds another little twist to it. Once a system is infected with this custom EFI firmware, devices that are being plugged into the system via Thunderbolt can be infected as well, because these connectors, these Thunderbolt connectors, also contain firmware that can be replaced, and then these devices can be used to carry the infection to other systems in which they are being plugged in later. Not much in terms of detection at this point, so really you just have to be careful what you plug into your system. The attack could possibly also been exploited via attachments. Essentially, you have to run code on the system in order to flash your firmware. There are a total of 3 vulnerabilities that have been identified in this work, and we can just hope that Apple will patch them shortly. And then we got more vulnerabilities in security software, this time in Symantec's Endpoint Protection 12.1. The SAP Manager suffers from a number of vulnerabilities, like for example, one authentication bypass vulnerability, a couple of path traversals, but also pretty basic stuff like, for example, SQL injection. As far as the client is concerned, there is, well, what they call a binary planting vulnerability, where someone could actually run arbitrary code on the system using the anti-authority system privileges. Well, and that's it for today. Thanks again for listening, and thanks again to ThreatStop for sponsoring this podcast. Talk to you again tomorrow.